trial of a man accused of murdering the MP, Sir David Amis, have seen footage of the attacker being tackled by two plainclothes police officers. BBC News.
And the news was read by Caroline Nichols. The big question in a moment here on Radio 4 is, who are we and why do we have a personality? We'll find out in Big Problems with Helen Keane, tonight's 6:30 comedy, after this.
On BBC iPlayer.
Do you not like disabled people in your restaurant?
Meet Alan.
Treating you badly, not on my watch.
Meet Barbara.
What we want is real rights, real choices.
A true story in the fight for disability rights.
I want to be outside the commons, right in their faces.
Civil rights!
If the world was designed a little better, we wouldn't need help.
I think I love you. Come on, then. You're supposed to say it back now.
Then Barbara met Alan.
Oh, going to protect me, are you? And who's going to protect you?
Oh, I'm beyond help.
Watch on iPlayer.
This is BBC Radio 4, where it's time for science meddler Helen Keane to solve another big problem.
So many problems, so little time. Humankind faces not just a raft of problems, but a Brexit flotilla of doom. Everywhere we look, we are surrounded by confusion and crisis. We are helpless because our greatest problem, our bete noire, our nemesis, our arch enemy, is within. The scariest monster is not under the bed, it's in our head. But also possibly under the bed, so maybe have a quick look just to be sure. But today, more than ever, are we closer to mastering the mind, storming the brain, finding out what's the matter with the grey matter? Let us put our heads together figuratively, if not literally, because, ooh, nits and things. As we wonder, will new technology offer an unabashed and even-handed look inside ourselves, like a robot gynecologist? Or will it coldly reduce our quirks and idiosyncrasies to a mere string of binary numbers? Though this would be, after all, some people's only way of being a 10. Welcome to Big Problems with Helen Keane!
Hello, I'm Helen Keane, and joining me to thrill and terrify with tales of our possible future, please welcome the voice of doom.
Hello.
And the voice of gloom.
Hi.
So, yes, in this episode, like Her Majesty the Queen attending a football match and eagerly yet confusedly joining in the chanting in the stands, we'll be insistently asking, who are we? Today, if we were trying to find ourselves inside our bodies right now, we might be thinking we are in our heads via our powerful minds. But can we trust that sense? As the great Emo Phillips said,
I used to think the brain was the greatest organ in the body. Then I realized who was telling me this.
You might try to find out who you are by going backpacking in South America or working in a bar in Australia for 6 months. But perhaps that's looking in the wrong place. Shouldn't we be looking inside? We'd certainly save on airplane sandwiches and condoms. However much brainy thinking I've done over the years, like many people, I still feel as if I haven't completely worked out who I am. I simultaneously envy and despise those people who seem to instantly know what they want from life and are ruthless at getting it. You know, people like Mark Zuckerberg, Genghis Khan and Nigel Rees. I feel as though it took me a really long time to work out what I was like, what I wanted from life, where I wanted to be, who I wanted to be with. Other people seem to work it all out much more quickly. Or maybe it just seemed that way.
As they say, don't compare your insides to other people's outsides. By which they mean don't compare how you feel to how other people seem. Not don't compare your kidneys to other people's ears. So, although that would also be good advice.
But is this something science and technology can help people like me with?
Do different brains give us different personalities? Or is that nonsensical? Science has already taught us, for example, that men's brains are bigger and women's brains are more...
Better. Well, I mean, women's brains are smaller, but given current scientific thinking, women's brains are more active, and I think the word you're looking for is efficient, therefore. certainly, with brain size doesn't really matter. Mary Beard may have a smaller brain than Piers Morgan, but that's like comparing a fillet steak with a 500-gram pack of Value mince.
Before we delve further into the brain, perhaps it's worth asking, why do we have personalities at all? It's a widespread phenomenon, even in the natural world. Solution one, learn from nature.
Yes, that does explain it. Thank you, thank you.
Pet owners will be the first to tell you that their animals definitely do have personalities. So there must be a reason, right? Personality is found across the animal kingdom. Everything I thought I knew about animal personalities I learned from cartoons. Rabbits are relaxed and sarcastic. Coyotes love explosives. Roadrunners are devious, and skunks are both French and sex offenders.
If Pepe Le Pew was on TV now, he'd have a restraining order served halfway through the first episode.
Scientists have theorised that differing personalities allow animals to avoid costly but ultimately pointless conflicts with each other.
And here we see the lion approach the wildebeest, who has just knocked over his pint whilst giving his views on Brexit. The wildebeest offers to replace the pint and makes a joke about the barmaid's breasts. And now the lioness has also joined the lion. She appears to be pointing out that the wildebeest is not worth it. And it would seem that the lion is appeased for now.
In any group of animals of the same species, there will therefore be different approaches to conflict spread out between groups and even within groups. In the pursuit of greater understanding, researchers also performed personality tests on wasps.
Who are famously utter bastards.
Wasps get a harsh rep.
Well, no, they're utter bastards.
But imagine how angry you'd be if every time you turned up to a picnic, someone smacked you in the face with a rolled-up newspaper. The researchers defined the queen wasp's behaviour as obstinate if she, quote, refused to fly away after repeated poking.
Of course, if it had been a male king wasp, such behaviour would be classified as strong-minded and determined.
Actually, as we've got you here, Queen Wasp, what happens to the male wasps?
They die.
Possibly slightly traumatised by his experience with the wasps, one of the researchers involved told the New Scientist, I'm so horrified by these wasps, but then don't forget, they have personalities too. And they found that a stubborn queen wasp can influence the behaviour of the entire colony. But yes, we'll come back to this with humans, where the queen led, other wasps followed.
And speaking of the queen, other perhaps surprising possessors of personalities include lizards. Note well, David Icke.
So why do researchers study this stuff? Well, the discovery of lizardy personality traits may help us to better understand and model animal population dynamics, say the scientists involved, i.e. we can predict with better accuracy the movements of animals, where they're going and what they're going to do when they get there and so forth.
But what kind of lizard personalities are there? Well, to answer this question, researchers caught a pregnant wild lizard and tested her young once they were born by measuring their reactions to the smells of different lizards. Those who were fine with the other lizard smell grew up to seek out more densely populated areas and hang out with fellow reptiles, while those who weren't really into the smell of their scaly brethren grew up to be asocial and spend more time alone. It's worth bearing in mind that lizards smell by licking with their tongues. So we can also take from this research that generally in life, if someone's coming up to you and licking you, it's safe to assume they're quite outgoing. Solution two, look to the past.
So, we may imagine our personalities are all in our heads, but the ancient Greeks had an alternative idea. They thought of it all in a much more physical way. Greek physician Hippocrates, 460 to 370 BC, developed Egyptian or Mesopotamian ideas of the humours into a kind of complex medical theory.
The four humours were dry, slapstick, puns, and Mrs. Brown's boys.
Phlegmatic, melancholic, choleric, and sanguine.
Worst boy band ever.
In the human body, the interaction of the four humours explain differences of age, genders, emotions and disposition. The influence of the humours could change with the seasons and times of the day and over the span of a human life. Heat stimulated action, cold depressed it. So it kind of followed that youth was hot and moist while age became cold and dry. Apparently, men as a sex were hotter and drier than women.
Hippocrates believed certain human moods, emotions and behaviours were caused by an excess / lack of humoury fluids, blood, yellow bile, black bile and phlegm.
Coincidentally, the basic recipe for haggis. These kind of gross ideas still held sway in the Middle Ages. If, for example, we imagine a medieval version of embarrassing bodies.
You're here at last, Doctor. It's got so bad that here I am, showing my pus to everyone. Oh, you've got to help me. I'm dying.
Well, let me be the judge of that. And looking at all the bile, blood and phlegm you're currently secreting, you know what? I'd say you're just a bit moody.
I'm really not feeling at all well.
I knew you'd say that because you've sprayed black bile all over the walls. Classic sign of melancholy. I think you just need to get your chin up. Now you've got your chin up, I can clearly see that there is quite an accumulation of phlegm, which we all know means cowardice, and I think you probably need to be brave because I've got some bad news. There's blood and stuff pouring out of a gaping hole in your neck.
Oh, how embarrassing. And what does blood mean?
Well, it means that either you're really happy, or you're about to die. Now, which is it? Oh, yeah, I remember.
It might seem odd to us now that in Shakespeare's day, the liver was the seat of the passions. But we're very happy to think of the heart being all about love.
Solution 3, matter over mind.
We may not believe in humours anymore, but it's generally accepted that physical states can affect us more than we admit to in our modern lives. To start with an unusual example, ex-British Prime Minister David Cameron would stretch out talks with the EU, making sure there were no comfort breaks, in the confident belief that he could hack his personality and remain focused in a laser-like way to guide others towards his various aims.
Maybe the whole Brexit referendum can be traced back to that fateful day during a discussion of the EU when David Cameron opened his briefcase under the table and realised he forgot to pack an empty Lucozade bottle. And thus it came to pass that Cameron himself finally let out a generous long stream of urine upon the British public in the form of a well-conceived, highly workable referendum of Brexit, to which this day still delights everyone on all sides of the Europe debate.
Only things have been slightly different. Also, re-toilet breaks. It's odd that unlike everything else ever, the EU haven't managed to formulate some regulations on this.
Now, next on the agenda, the complex issue of the Schengen Protocol and its impact on projected trade quotas with regards to the Swiss model. But first, has everyone been? Does anyone need a wee? Really? Because we're not stopping.
Would people really abandon their principles and convictions because they need a bathroom break? And in fact, a more recent study did suggest that thinking is impaired if you need to visit the smallest room but aren't able to. So, this could work in the opposite direction, making you much less yourself.
If you judge people, you have no time to love them.
Mother Teresa, this is the last toilet stop for 2 hours.
Out of my way, idiots! Mama T gotta take a pee!
But it isn't just big, grand conflicts that can be affected by our physical states. Even at home, in the domestic sphere, we're prey to needy bodies changing our varying feelings. A recent study at Ohio State University showed that low blood sugar could make married couples more aggressive towards each other.
Which is why you should always give the person you love your last Rolo.
This was a somewhat intense study. It involved participants being given voodoo dolls that represented their partners. Whenever they felt cross with them, they were to stick in a pin to the doll. The couples also competed in tasks against their partner in order to blast them with noise, which sounds like an ungodly cross between Mr. and Mrs. and Eurovision. I think the thing everything is missing here is that just agreeing to take part in this trial may not indicate the most healthy of relationships.
So what are you doing on the
friends?
Oh, we're taking part in a trial where we stick pins in effigies of each other and then blast each other with air horns.
Oh, lucky you. We're off to IKEA.
We even have portmanteau words to describe the blended relationship between certain physical and emotional states. In 2015, hangry entered the Oxford English Dictionary. It's defined as bad-tempered or irritable as a result of hunger. I get very hangry if I miss a meal.
To explain, as time passes after your last meal, the amount of nutrients from your food circulating in your bloodstream begins to fall. If enough time passes and your blood glucose levels fall far enough, your brain will perceive it as a life-threatening situation. Other tissues and organs can make do with various other nutrients to keep going, but your brain is critically dependent on glucose to do its job. As glucose levels fall, adrenaline levels rise, prompting the fight or flight response. Everything starts to go to hell in a handcart, basically all because you didn't have a proper breakfast.
We here at Big Problems realise this blend of physical and emotional imperatives was clearly a growing area of scientific interest. So have some further suggestions for the OED. Skitchy. Sexy and itchy.
Sir Pret. Surprised and wet.
Shindignant. Angry with a leg injury.
Howie. Happy though in pain.
Sombrero. Sad. In a Mexican hat.
There is even some evidence that more serious, long-term mental conditions could also have a physical basis. For instance, in some cases, depression may be influenced or worsened by the health and proliferation of good bacteria in your gut.
Certainly no one's suggesting it's as simple as saying, cheer up, love, have a fancy yogurt. But if you don't like yogurt and your good bacteria seriously needs replenishing, a possible treatment might involve a prescription for a fecal transplant, also referred to as fecal infusions.
Oh, I'm depressed.
Have you considered a fecal infusion?
I think I'll stick to chamomile.
So, this is still a controversial theory, but with a growing body of research and evidence to suggest that, possibly, replacing your poo with the poo of a healthy relative could recolonise your gut with good bacteria and help relieve depression in some cases. The idea is to get the poo from a relative in order to match similar sorts of bacteria in your body. And also, because that makes their gift shopping that bit more convenient.
Happy birthday to you!
Oh, thank you! Oh, I can't guess what this is. It's sort of...
Don't shake it!
So as much as we'd like to think of ourselves as rational beings, above the fleshy, messy demands of our bodies, we are still ruled very much by our bodies and their natural needs.
So, speaking of understanding ourselves in terms of natural urges, in the early part of the 20th century, Freud developed the psychoanalytic theory of personality development, which argued that personality is formed through conflicts among three fundamental structures of the human mind: the id, ego, and superego, and wanting to have sex with your parents.
My parents?
No, not your parents specifically.
Why, what's wrong with my parents? They always speak very highly of you.
But more recently, we've kind of moved on from sexual urges as a way of totally nailing, as it were, our personality-led urges. There's a new, often overwhelming motivation in our modern lives: work. Which brings us to...
Solution 4. Let algorithms tell you who you are. How dare you?
Work is so central to our lives now that we try to understand our personalities so we know which job is right for us and how we work best with other people, which leads to endless personality tests and puzzles.
If Jeff gets a train going at 40 miles an hour and Harry cycles at one-third of the speed, what time will Jeff arrive at the realisation that his high-status job is a mask for his insecurities stemming from a difficult relationship with his father?
Personality tests often give a score based on the big five personality traits: openness, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism, or OCEAN for short.
Canoe would have been better, but whatever.
Now, tests for personality used to be quite a serious affair, carried out by professionals who had trained for years, but with the advent of quizzes in magazines, the internet and so forth, the idea that anyone could test themselves took hold. And this idea is something that we have very much run with here tonight in the unlikely laboratory of the BBC Radio Theatre. So, Voice of Doom, could you describe our scientific method here, please?
The amount of saliva you produce after putting a drop of lemon juice on your tongue might reveal something about your personality, says science.
Mm. So we are going to ask for two volunteers, I think, from the audience. Volunteers who, I should say, there's certain criteria. We want one extrovert to test. We want someone who is quite outgoing, so it shouldn't be too difficult to find you because you have to come up on stage. You have to be okay. I should just say, this is a proviso. You have to be okay with the idea of me putting lemon juice in your mouth.
Me?
Excellent. Straight in there. Please. Please come up to the stage. Our extrovert. Fantastic. What's your name, extrovert?
Usher.
Usher, thank you, Usher. Well, we need someone who is now an introvert. Now, this might be quite tricky. So if you're sitting next to an introvert and you've always had slightly complex feelings towards them and thought about humiliating them in public, please speak now.
Yes.
Yeah, oh. are you an introvert?
I am fairly introverted.
We believe you, actually. So what's your name? Introvert, what's your name?
Sorry,
your name's Sorry, okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Trovert.
So if you're just tuning in, I should point out that this is citric acid and these are volunteers. This is an unopened bottle of lemon juice. I'm going to measure out. Open wide for some of my lemon juice. Can you sort of knock that back? The idea is, if you are an introvert, you should produce a lot of drool. And if you're an extrovert, it should just be par for the course. It's just a dead every day for you. We then rigorously measure the amount of saliva they produce in response to the stimuli with a cotton bud tied in the middle with cotton. The more saliva they produce, the heavier one end of the cotton bud will be. Using this data slash spittle, can we predict whether or not our volunteers enjoy socialising? Let's find out. Yeah, stick Q-tip in that end. Yeah, just so we can measure how much drool. There's a Q-tip. Think of the great people who have been on this stage, and now here I am putting lemon in strangers' mouths. Stop! Remove the Q-tip. Brilliant. Yes. Hold the Q-tip by its string, and let's just see how heavily it hangs. Oh, quite heavily. There's quite a lot of drool on there. This is interesting. Now, Ian Trovert. Remove, and let's just see, can you hold by its string?
No difference. Conclusive proof of the power of lemon juice. According to Einstein's theory, that is why sunlight is yellow, because it's made of lemons. So thanks so much, and join us next time on Drooling with Shy People.
But in future, maybe it wouldn't be you discovering these revelations about yourself. For instance, it seems the way things are going, rather than applying for a job, in a few years, AI might be sent out to skim across pools of your data that have been stored up, including your Facebook page, and identify likely candidates to be invited forward. The process could go something like this.
So what would you say is your greatest strength?
Right, so a picture of a sunrise over the sea with white scrolly lettering over it. Life is so much brighter when we focus on what truly matters.
Thank you. And your greatest weakness? Oh, yes, I see cat videos.
Curious personality tests, scans and algorithms are used to work out what sort of people we are, what sort of jobs we should be doing and what sort of products we might buy. But surely there's a more obvious use.
Oh, what a lovely restaurant.
Yes, yes, I thought you'd like it based on your Facebook likes history.
So, what do you do for a living?
Oh, let's not talk about me. Let's talk about you. You seem like someone who would make friends easily. Do you agree, strongly agree, neither agree nor disagree? Or strongly disagree?
Agree, I suppose.
Excellent. Now, What would you like to order? Actually, don't worry, I could tell from your brain scan that you're partial to steak, medium rare. I feel like I already know you so well.
You're a strange, strange little man.
Are you basing that on my internet search history?
Okay, I've had enough. I'm leaving now.
I knew you'd say that.
Scientists even think that we are not far away now from pills that can change your personality. But then, is it even your personality anymore if you have to get it from a medicine bottle? Or is it just a neurological form of playing dress-up? It'll presumably be easy to spot, too, among people who really know the person.
I think the Prime Minister might be taking personality pills.
Really? Why?
She just looked comfortable talking to a member of the public.
There are many parts of the brain we're still discovering new functions and properties for, like amygdala, anterior cortex. Yeah, for some reason, they often sound like Star Wars characters or shoes by Clarks. Scientists have developed a brain scanner that can detect psychopaths.
But how do you decide who to put into the scanner?
Well, we test them with a questionnaire first.
Ah, so really the first and clearest indicator that you might be a psychopath is actually that you've just scored you are a psychopath on a test, possibly by not even doing the test, but by rolling it up and using it to kill one of the other candidates.
But yes, one day we may be able to tell who is a psychopath with a simple brain scan, unlike now where we can tell by whether they put milk in first when making tea.
But possibly, probably, all this technology is overrated in terms of telling us about ourselves. Have we really advanced that far from the ancient world and as humans being a collection of slightly unpleasant bodily fluids?
No, not really. Facebook likes can predict personality better than your actual friends can, so say the headlines. But really, even if a computer would be better at picking out your favourite colour than your partner, that doesn't mean very much for us. You'd still be in a relationship with your partner rather than a computer.
But it does have a lot of significance, for instance, for marketing people who want to sell us stuff. So this is the thing. Here, personality is potentially becoming more of a handy way to label us to potential employers and then manipulate us into spending our wages in a particular way. So really, that isn't bringing us any nearer to the fascinating business of knowing ourselves, just allowing other people to get more out of us.
A lot of this research into personalities disregards the concept of change. Are our personalities fixed? Sure, we have some recognisable traits here and there, but overall, perhaps no. We respond and change to our environments and everyday experiences, and even our overly full bladders, and if we skip breakfast. We have to make sure as we go forward that technology is helping us to be our best selves in the best circumstances. Go on, have a wee. It should not be saying activity in your amygdala currently indicates you'd like to buy a copy of Amanda Holden's autobiography off of Amazon. And let's remember, we're naturally just bily, bloody, phlegmy animals doing our thing as best we can in the circumstances. Being whatever we are is, or should be, the process of change and striving.
There isn't one single star that's you. More of a constellation of experiences, circumstances that change depending on where you're viewing them from and at what time of day or night it is, or what season of the year.
Yes, and if you look up at the night sky, tonight we see some very interesting activity indeed in David Green, the Quantity Surveyor, and with the naked eye too.
As Carl Jung, the Swiss psychoanalyst and psychiatrist and founder of analytical psychology, said,
"The achievement of personality means nothing less than the optimum development of the whole individual being. Personality is the supreme realization of the innate idiosyncrasy of a living being. It is an act of courage flung in the face of life."
Thank you for listening and good night.
Big Problems with Helen Keane was written by Helen Keane, Jenny LaVille, Lloyd Langford and Kerry Quinlan, with special thanks to Professor Richard Wiseman. It was performed by Helen Keane, John Coulshaw and Susie Kane. The producer was Katie Tyrrell and it was a BBC Studios production.